Governor Scott Walker, uniter, divider. During this half of our State Capitol Report, we will discuss a new three-part series that is being released this week by the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism about Governor Walker, his personality, his governing style, and his drive. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 7:37 on this Monday, January the 9th. And lucky me, I am back from vacation just in time to talk with my colleague, Bill Leaders, about his latest work, and we welcome your questions and reactions. What is it you like or dislike about Governor Walker's governing style? What questions do you have about what makes him tick? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Bill Leaders is with the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, which is operated under the guidance of a nationally noted board of directors and collaborates with UW-Madison and media outlets across the nation, including Wisconsin Public Radio. And Bill Leaders joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks for being here. You've been busy over the holidays.
I have. Yeah. I produced this three-part series on Scott Walker, which is being unveiled on our website, wisconsinwatch.org, and in daily newspapers across the state. And part one and part two have run already. Part two will come out tomorrow.
We have posted part one and part two on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, and we will post part three as well. Part one, Love Him or Hate Him, Walker's character. Part two, Core Beliefs, How Walker Governs. And part three, Man on a Mission, What Drives Walker. And this series, Bill, is based in part on your year-ender interview that you did with Governor Walker, where he expressed some regrets in how he handled his first year in office. What does he regret?
Well, he said, and this is the first time I've heard him express any sort of regret about anything that he's done. Often in press conferences, people ask questions like, Governor, was it a mistake too? Or are you sorry that? Or are you concerned about? And his answer always is no. He knows exactly what he's doing. His intentions are clear. And he doesn't concede error. But he did in a couple of instances in my interview. One, he said that he felt that he should have done a better job of explaining the changes that he wanted to make with regard to collective bargaining and union arrangements with the state than he did. He should have spent some time selling the public on the idea before he trotted it out. He also acknowledged in my interview, and I haven't heard this elsewhere, that his conduct in the fake phone call from David Koch was embarrassing to himself, that he regretted how he handled that situation and he was chagrined by it.
Well, what the heck? I have a clip from that fake phone call. Let's take a listen to what he had to say here to the blogger who was posing as one of the Koch brothers.
My only fear would be is if there was a ruckus caused, is that that would scare the public into thinking maybe the governor's got to settle to avoid all these problems. You know, whereas I've said, hey, you know, we can handle this. People can protest. This is Madison, you know, full of the 60s liberals. Let them protest. It's not going to affect us. And as long as we go back to our homes and the majority of people are telling us we're doing the right thing, let them protest all they want.
Yeah, he was talking there about how he thought about putting some, disruptors into the crowds.
Yeah, that came right after the fake caller had suggested that he plant troublemakers among the demonstrators. He said, we thought about that, but my only fear is that might force me to reach some sort of a deal on this, that the public was kind of sick to death of the protest already, and that would push it over the edge. He'd be forced to compromise. And one of the people that I spoke to in the series, State Senator Chris Larson, the Democrat in Milwaukee, really focused on that. And he said, well, look at the reason that he gives for not wanting to plant troublemakers among the crowd. It's not that people might get hurt. It's not that law enforcement officers would be placed at risk. It's that the reaction might force him to compromise. And that was so unpalatable to him that was the only thing that stopped him from hurting people. That's how Senator Larson put it, which, you know, is a very stringent way to interpret that statement of the governor. I think what the governor was embarrassed about, as he explained it to me, was that in that call, he talked about his national media appearances, and he talked about the positive reaction he was getting from other Republican governors. And he was very much, you know, playing into this idea that he was at the center of the story. And it was embarrassing to him when that angle came out, where he was kind of boastfully putting himself at the front of the story. And I think he genuinely did feel taken aback by that, that he had made himself so prominent in this tale rather than the issue that he was trying, the agenda he was trying to achieve. And as he said to me, it was a reality check for him. It forced him to reassess how he was seeing the situation when that call came out, and it was such an embarrassment.
So, Bill, Governor Walker, is he doing what he's doing because he thinks it's going to genuinely make Wisconsin a better place to be, or is he doing this because this is what Alec and other Republican governors and the Republican Party wants to have happen?
I don't know that you can answer that definitively. I do think that Governor Walker sees himself as a person of extraordinary political courage, and I think that he's right. I think as politicians go, he's extraordinary. And one of the things that my series identifies is that whether you like him or you don't like him, you kind of agree that he's different than other politicians. You might think that he's more stubborn or less willing to compromise, or you might think that he's more resolute and more committed to his principles. But you do identify a certain extraordinary quality about his ability to stick to his agenda, to withstand negative reaction, and to boldly lead where no one has gone before. Walker, in describing his own life and political career, I think gives himself a lot of credit for being the person who will stand up in the situation where someone needs to stand up. That's how he sees his run for Milwaukee County Executive. Something terrible had happened in terms of the pension scandal. Something needed to be done. Someone needed to come in and clean that county up, and he accepted that challenge. Despite all those odds of being a Republican in a largely Democratic county, he accepted that challenge, and he did the job. He sees the collective bargaining piece and the changes that he's made in state government as an extension of that, or another challenge similar to that, where someone needed to do these things. You couldn't just keep putting the state's fiscal problems off into the future. You needed to address them head on, and this is how he's going to do it.
Yeah, his experience with the unions in Milwaukee County shaped what he has done now on a statewide level when it comes to collective bargaining?
Absolutely. The way that he describes it is that the unions in Milwaukee had no intention of compromising with him, and that made him convinced that the only way that you could succeed in making a more fiscally responsible approach to governing was to change the terms of collective bargaining, that as long as they had that power, they were going to use it to deny a local government the ability to have the flexibility that it needed in order to deal with tight fiscal times. So he learned from that experience that something drastic needed to be done, and he was determined to make that happen.
Did he anticipate the massive protests, the Democrats leaving the state, and now what we're seeing right now, an effort to recall him?
Well, he said in his interview with me that he absolutely did not expect that was something that took him by surprise, the Democrats leaving the state, the size and the duration of the protests, the blowback that happened was not what he anticipated. He thought that he would announce his changes, they would be passed in short order, and people would adjust to them. Obviously, in the Coke call, when he said, you know, before we dropped the bomb, he was indicating that he realized there was something explosive about the announcement that he was going to make about what would be in the budget repair bill. And he knew that there would be some level of reaction to it that would occur. I do have to believe that he had no clear sense that the reaction would be anything like what it was, which is really historic, both for Wisconsin and the nation, for there to have been protests as large and as sustained as what we saw here in Wisconsin.
Well, Bill, the title of the three-part series is Governor Walker, a uniter or divider. Is he both?
I think that he unites people in his support if they believe in him. And I think that it's true. Someone made the observation in my piece that he has support that runs deeper than other governors. I mean, people would not go to bat for him. People would not go to bat for, say, Jim Doyle or even Tommy Thompson the way that they might for Scott Walker. He has people who believe in him very deeply and who would go into battle for him.
So what do you think? Is Governor Scott Walker a uniter or a divider? Do you agree or disagree with his governing style? Do you have any questions about what drives him? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Bill Leaders. We are discussing his series on Governor Walker that is being released this week, and we will get to your calls in just a moment. It's going to be mostly sunny today. Highs will be in the upper 30s in the north to the upper 40s in the south. Even warmer tomorrow, or milder, partly cloudy with highs in the low 40s in the north to the low 50s in the far south. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 8 o'clock, we will welcome in Mike Crane, the director of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Mondays with Mike and your opportunity to make a New Year's resolution for Wisconsin Public Radio. What should we do to improve our service to you? Again, that's coming up after 8 o'clock, all things Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, reporter Bill Leaders is with us talking about all things Scott Walker. Bill wrote, produced a series on Governor Walker that is being released this week. Parts 1 and 2 are out. Part 3 will be released tomorrow. Bill is the director of the Money and Politics Project at the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. And our lines are full, and time is limited, so let me go to the phones. Brad in Plover is with us first. Hello, Brad.
Hi. I talked to Scott Walker once on WPR. He was extremely smug and dismissive of my comments. Marquette University mentioned that he eventually confessed to multiple electioneering violations while he was running for student body president at Marquette. Could you talk a little bit about those violations, such as his campaign workers snatching up copies of the school newspaper before the election?
Yeah, I touch on this in part three, which comes out tomorrow. As I understand it, the campaign violations for which he was sanctioned had to do with campaigning before he had declared his candidacy. When the student newspaper published an editorial that decided not to endorse either candidate, some of his supporters were seen throwing away copies of the newspaper. There was a editorial that ran in the paper that basically declared that Scott Walker was unfit for the job of student body president because of the negativity of his campaign. Now, he was a sophomore in college at the time, and this was a student government election, but somehow Walker had painted his opponent in such stark and negative terms as to draw a rebuke from the student paper. And I think there is something there that has continued, that he does tend to see things in very stark and sometimes negative terms. He sees the opposition as a little darker than maybe he needs to.
Bill, we had a commenter on our Facebook page who, in response to your piece, said, why did Governor Walker, then student Scott Walker, leave college before getting a degree?
I didn't ask him that question. He did have this run for political office when he was a sophomore. He stayed in college for some time after that, but left without gaining a degree. I think he took a job with the Red Cross when he left college and never did complete his degree. I don't know if there's more to that story or not.
Mm-hmm. Our next caller is Ricardo in Racine. Hello, Ricardo.
Good morning. I'm thinking along the lines that you've been talking about. It's interesting that Walker seems to have no humility or compassion toward people in need, and he is a son of a Baptist minister. But he's never said, let's talk, let's compromise, let's work on things. And even teachers have been willing to give up in their middle or lower class many of their benefits. And I'm wondering why he's not willing to do this.
Because he thinks that there needs to be a fundamental change in the covenant that exists between government and its employees. And he's the one who's going to make that happen. And he knows that there's going to be some blowback associated with that, and he's going to withstand it.
Mm-hmm. Does he think he's going to... He's confident he would win a recall election?
I don't know that. I think he's willing to... Well, I said before that, you know, he sees himself as a person of extraordinary political courage, and he's right. I think part of that is he is willing, perhaps, to go down in flames for having brought his agenda to where he wanted it to go. There is something that kind of lurks behind this, and it's the way that Walker tends to define issues. And it's one of the insights I think that my series touched on is he sees things in, he defines issues in terms of stark choices. For instance, on collective bargaining, the way that he viewed it is that either the state was going to have massive layoffs of teachers and other public employees, or we're going to take away their collective bargaining rights and extract a unilateral concessions in terms of their benefits. It's either or. Now, there were obviously other options. You could have gone for another round of furloughs. You could have negotiated the benefit concessions without taking away collective bargaining rights. There were multiple other ways that the situation could have been approached, but in his mind, it was starkly divided between we're either going to have to fire tons and tons and tons of public employees or we're going to have to take this step with regard to their collective bargaining ability. And when you define it in those stark terms, it's easy for you to say, well, the way that I'm doing it is actually the more humane. It's the better. It's the preferable way.
Governor Walker, according to Ricardo, has no compassion, no humility. I mean, did you sense any of that?
I think he had humility about the Coke call. Mm. I think that, you know, I don't doubt his sincerity. And I think that when he spoke about his regret about how he handled that call and the way that he kind of, you know, boastfully put himself at the center of the story, that that was genuine, that he felt that that was humiliating and that was the wrong way for him to have thought about that issue and that he needed to change the way that he was seeing himself in relation to the story.
Didn't you interview his mother about some charitable project and that he took on and the tenacity that he took that on with?
Yeah. Again, this speaks to the fact that he sees himself as the person who steps up to meet the challenge. When he was a young boy in Plainfield, Iowa, I think around 8 years old, he noticed that the meeting hall where government held its meetings lacked an Iowa flag. And so he collected contributions to buy a Iowa flag to donate to the hall. He went around with a mayonnaise jar and collected the contributions, and they went to the flag store and they bought the flag. Him stepping up to meet the challenge of the moment. That's a good story that she had, and I think that's also congruent with how he saw his stepping up to run for county executive in Milwaukee County and his stepping up to be the governor who did all of these dramatic and bold things.
Next, we will go to Carol in Mequon. Hello, Carol.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I do agree with the caller as far as Scott Walker seeing things in stark terms, a stark contrast. I think that's why he easily fell into the situation he's in now. I don't necessarily believe all the ideas were his. I think I've been reading that these kinds of plans to break unions have been going on since the 70s. And I think he was an ideal candidate of the GOP to kind of implement these things. And seeing things in black and white terms kind of shows that he doesn't have the ability to compromise, to work those things through, and that given an agenda, the best he can do is follow those things to the letter, and so there's not those opportunities to have those shades of gray. And I think he will be recalled and also lose, and I think he'll do okay for himself in the long run because I think he will eventually be a lobbyist or have some comfortable job. So I kind of feel sorry for him in a way because I don't think he saw all this coming, but by the same token, I think he'll be okay politically.
All right, Carol. Thank you very much for your thoughts. A reaction to that, Bill?
Well, Obviously, Governor Walker is able to decide what type of reaction matters to him, and he's able to withstand the enormous negative reaction that he's received for the things that he's done by focusing in his mind on the positive reaction that he gets from whatever quarters it comes from, whether it's, you know, the National Conservative Movement or people in Wisconsin who are supportive of his agenda. That's who he says, okay, they like me. I'm okay with that. Those are the people. That's the reaction that I care about. As I was waiting for my interview with him at the executive residence, there's a television reporter from actually Wisconsin Public Television. I was overhearing him talking to the reporter and telling the story about driving around in his car one day, and someone drives by, notices who it is, and gives him the finger. A few minutes later, someone comes by and gives him the thumbs up. It's very clear which reaction matters most to Scott Walker. He can dismiss the middle finger. He appreciates the thumbs up.
We have just a minute to go. What do you hope the takeaway is from your series?
I think that, you know, we should recognize that there is something extraordinary about our governor. You can like it or you can hate it. You can admire him or you can revile him. But he does have a kind of political courage, and he does have a kind of resolve that we've rarely seen in political people. And political people are in popularity contests. They want to be liked. They want to do things that are popular. And this governor is driven by something other than that. He's driven by a sense of what is right and what is wrong.
Very interesting piece. Thanks very much, Bill, for being here. Bill Leaders, producer of the series on Governor Walker, and you can find that on the Wisconsin Watch website and also on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.